Turn to Proverbs 5 and verse 9. I'm going to cover a couple of more verses today, Lord willing. Proverbs 5, 9. This one comes right after verse 8, which I'll read for the context. It says, "Remove thy way far from her, and come not nigh the door of her house." Verse 9, "Lest thou give thine honor unto others, and thy years unto the cruel." So we'll look at that first phrase there, "lest thou give thine honor unto others." So in verse 8, as I just read there, we saw that Solomon had given a commandment to stay far away from the strange woman, and now he gives a reason for that commandment. And it's good enough for God just to give a commandment. Reasons are good, but we don't actually have to have reasons to obey. But in this case, the Lord thankfully gave us some reasons, which should really sink down into our ears, because this is some really serious stuff. So removing himself from the strange woman and not going near her house will prevent a man from losing his honor. And we know that based on the word lest. I think I defined lest here just a couple, maybe last Bible study or the one before, but I'll define it again. Lest is a conjunction. It is used as a negative particle of intention or purpose, introducing a clause expressive of something to be prevented or guarded against. So whatever comes after lest means that whatever he's saying there, he's trying to prevent or guard against that happening. So lest thou shouldest ponder, oh, that's the wrong verse, lest thou give thine honor unto others. So in other words, he is telling him these things to prevent or guard against his honor being given unto others. Honor is high respect, esteem, or reverence accorded to exalted worth or rank, deferential admiration or approbation, as felt or entertained in the mind for some person or thing, as received, gained, held, or enjoyed. It means glory, renown, fame, credit, reputation, good name. It's the opposite of dishonor or disgrace. So when somebody's honored, they're highly respected, esteemed, and reverenced. They are not dishonored or disgraced. They also have a good name and a good reputation. That's what it means to be held in honor. But the man who commits adultery with the strange woman will get dishonor instead of honor. If you look over in Proverbs 6, verse 24, Solomon here again is warning of the evil woman, he calls her here, and he's giving his commandment for the purpose of, verse 24, to keep thee from the evil woman, from the flattery of the tongue of the strange of a strange woman. And then when we go down to verse 33, we see here's what happens if you end up in the clutches of the strange woman. Verse 33, a wound and dishonor shall he get, and his reproach shall not be wiped away. So if you go to the strange woman, your honor will be given to another, and in place of it, you will get dishonor, disgrace. So let's look at that, that thine honor may be given unto others, and see what this means. What does it mean to have your honor given unto others? How can a person's honor, respect, esteem, how can that be given to somebody else? And actually, it can happen in many different ways, and I'll give you a bunch of them here. This could happen when his wife divorces him and marries another man who receives the honor from her that would have been given to him. His honor is given to the new husband. Ephesians 5 and verse 33. Ephesians 5:33. This is instruction to husbands and wives. This part's to the wives. Nevertheless, let every one of you in particular so love his wife even as himself. So the first part's the husband, second part's the wife. And the wife see that she reverence her husband. Now, reverence is another word that means honor, essentially. It means to salute a person with deep respect, to show respect for. Remember, honor was high respect. To show respect for, one, by bowing, kneeling, etc., to make obeisance, to treat with respect or deference, and that was another word, deferential admiration, there in the definition of honor. So to treat with respect or deference, to esteem, which was another definition of honor, high respect, esteem, to value highly. So reverence is to honor, to reverence is to honor, and honor was also defined as reverence. So these are synonyms. So when it says that the wife ought to reverence her husband, in other words, she ought to honor her husband. And if her husband goes off and commits adultery and she divorces him and marries somebody else, then the new husband gets the honor or the reverence that the old husband would have gotten. So he has given his honor to somebody else. This could also happen when this man's children stop honoring him because of his heinous crime and they bestow their respect on somebody else who is worthy of it in their eyes. Could be a stepfather, I suppose, or just could be somebody else that they look up to. That their honor would have been directed at their father, now it's directed at somebody else because they don't have any time for their father. Ephesians 6 and verse 2 says, "Honor thy father and mother, which is the first commandment with promise." Now, we should always honor our parents regardless, but your honor is going to be taken down many notches if your father is an adulterer. You're not going to have the same reverence for him that you did prior to that. Or this could also happen when the adulterer's brethren in the church stop honoring him because he's been excluded for adultery and he's lost that the honor that was due to him, and that honor will end up being put on another faithful brother in the church. If you look in Romans 12 and verse 10, it tells us that we are supposed to in honor prefer one another. Romans 12 and verse 10 says, "Be kindly affection one to another with brotherly love in honor, preferring one another." So church members should receive honor from each other. But if you commit adultery or fornication with a strange woman and get put out of the church, your honor will be given to somebody else. It may be given to one of the weaker brethren in the church that didn't have as much honor before you went and screwed up. 1 Corinthians 12 and verse 23. It says, "And those members of the body which we think to be less honorable, upon these we bestow more abundant honor, and our uncomely parts have more abundant comeliness." So another person will end up with the honor that belonged to that guy. Or, in another example, let's just say the guy had employees, or let's say he was some man of power, some man in government, and he had subjects. Well, his employees or his subjects will lose their respect for him, not honor him, and then give that honor to somebody else to whom it's due. Let's look at 1 Timothy 6 and verse 1. 1 Timothy 6, 1. "Let as many servants as are under the yoke count their own masters worthy of all honor, that the name of God and his doctrine be not blasphemed." So servants are to honor their masters, whether that was a slave master situation or whether it's an employee-employer situation. Either way, those that are under ought to honor those that are above them. But what happens if the master commits adultery and he's now taken off that pedestal? Or this could happen to a political figure, if you could imagine that. 1 Peter 2 and verse 17. 1 Peter 2:17 says, "Honor all men, love the brotherhood, fear God, honor the king." Did Bill Clinton ever have any honor? I don't know if he ever had any honor. But if he did, I'll bet you he lost some with that whole Monica Lewinsky adultery thing that people soon forget. But anyway, he did lose honor, he should have anyway. So if he loses it, then that honor that would have been due to him gets given to somebody else to whom it's due. Somebody else that would take his place. Romans 13 and verse 7. Because we are supposed to honor them to whom it is due. Nowadays, you have to really look around to find somebody that's due honor, but there still are some left. Paul says here in Romans 13:7, "Render therefore to all their dues, tribute to whom tribute is due, custom to whom custom, fear to whom fear, honor to whom honor." Or one more example, this could happen to a pastor that does such a reprehensible thing as adultery or fornication, and he loses the honor of his church members, which will then be given to the man who takes his place, if his church members have enough sense to get rid of him and not keep him and continue to honor an adulterer, like a certain pastor that we know of, or some of you know of anyway. 1 Thessalonians 5, 12 through 13. 1 Thessalonians 5, 12 through 13. It says, "And we beseech you, brethren, to know them which labor among you and are over you in the Lord, and admonish you, and to esteem them very highly in love for their work's sakes, and be at peace among yourselves." So he tells them to esteem. There we go. To esteem them very highly, and to remember, to honor is to esteem. Those are synonyms. So in other words, the church members are supposed to esteem or honor those who labor among them and are over them in the Lord, the overseer, the one that labors in the word and doctrine, the pastor, in other words. But if a pastor does that, his honor should be definitely taken away, and he should never receive honor again, not honor in the sense of being in that office. He could be restored to the church as a member, and he'd be honored like anybody else, but as a pastor, he should never be honored ever again when you do something like that. So that was, what, five different ways where you could end up giving your honor unto others. And I want you to notice that it says give. When a man chooses to go in unto a strange woman, he has given his honor unto others. Nobody's taken it from him. Or you can't say, oh, this is just wrong. These people, they've taken their honor from me. This woman took my honor from me. No, you gave it away. When you did that, nobody took it from you. You gave it away. And it doesn't belong to you anymore. You don't deserve it, because honor is not seemly for a fool. Proverbs 26 and verse 1. "And a person that goes to a strange woman is a fool, if there ever was one." Proverbs 26 and verse 1 says, "As snow in summer and as rain in harvest, so honor is not seemly for a fool." And the thing is, with somebody especially in a position of leadership, like the boss, the king, the pastor, the father, for that matter, anybody that's in a position of leadership, it doesn't take very much to lose your honor, right? It takes a long time to build that up and to acquire that honor, but it takes very little to lose it. Ecclesiastes 10 and verse 1. Ecclesiastes 10:1 says, "Dead flies cause the ointment of the apothecary to send forth a stinking savor. So doth a little folly him that is in reputation for wisdom and honor." Just a little folly. Doesn't take much. It doesn't matter if you were faithful to your wife every day for 50 years, and then you commit adultery after, you know, the day after your 50th anniversary. You say, well, I mean, that's only one day out of like thousands. Eh. A little folly, that's all it takes. And your reputation is permanently destroyed. And then the second part of the verse, "And thy years unto the cruel, lest thou give thy honor unto others, and thy years unto the cruel." Cruel, when we're speaking of persons, means disposed to inflict suffering, indifferent to or taking pleasure in another's pain or distress, destitute of kindness or compassion, merciless, pitiless, hard-hearted. Now, I don't know about you, but I wouldn't want to be in the hands of a person like that, a person that has no pity, no mercy, and would even take pleasure in punishing you, harming you, hurting you. That would be, you know, falling into the hands of a cruel man like that would be a dreadful punishment. So, let this be a stern warning to stay away from strange women, because you are going to fall into the hands of the cruel, and your years are going to be given to them. The remainder of the years of the life of the adulterer who goes in unto a strange woman will be subject to cruel people who will show no mercy. In Proverbs 6 and verse 33, it says that he'll get a wound and dishonor, and his reproach shall not be wiped away. Proverbs 6:33. "A wound and dishonor shall he get, and his reproach shall not be wiped away." People like that take pleasure in being unmerciful, aren't just going to wipe that slate clean and just forget about it. They're going to make sure that you remember it too. A woman's husband, you know, that you have sinned against by taking his wife, he's not going to spare in the day of vengeance because of jealousy, even if the offender tries to pay him off. Verses 34 and 35. For jealousy is the rage of a man. Therefore, he will not spare in the day of vengeance. He will not regard any ransom, neither will he rest content, though thou givest many gifts. You try to pay him off all you want, your years are going to be given to the cruel. He's not going to accept that bribe. He wants his pound of flesh. And the reason is what Solomon told us in Song of Solomon 8 and verse 6, that jealousy is cruel as the grave. Song of Solomon 8 and verse 6. It says, Song of Solomon 8, 6. Set me as a seal upon thine heart, as a seal upon thine arm, for love is strong as death. Jealousy is cruel as the grave. The coals thereof are coals of fire, which hath a most vehement flame. A man's love for his wife and the jealousy that ensues when somebody else tries to take her from him is cruel. He will not be a nice guy. At least a lot of husbands, you know, like a real man, he's not going to be a nice guy whenever his wife got taken away. And there's been plenty of people that have paid for that with their lives, you know, that husbands have just killed them. And I don't feel bad for a guy like that. Not at all. We're told in Proverbs 27, verse 4, that wrath is cruel. Proverbs 27, 4, wrath is cruel and anger is outrageous, but who is able to stand before envy? Which envy and jealousy are similar, right? Jealousy is the rage of a man. And it's cruel as death, or cruel as the grave. Now, in biblical times, if a man went into a strange woman, he would be punished by the judges. Job 31, 9 through 12. And, you know, the judges back in the day were not very nice people. I mean, when you got turned over to be punished, you know, you remember what happened to Jesus whenever he got turned over to be punished. He didn't even do anything wrong. And the punishment he got was absolutely severe. I mean, over the top. The scourging was just horrible, right? With these whips with pieces of glass in it, metal barbs, and I mean, just being whipped and whipped and ripping your flesh off. I mean, just horrible, absolutely violent, merciless. We've kind of gotten away from that today, right? You get slapped on the hands or nothing, or get a few years in jail or something, but in those days, there was some real severe punishment. You'd be given to the cruel. It was called the tormentors, right? Deliver him to the tormentors until he pays the last mite, there Jesus said. But anyway, Job 31, 9 through 12, Job says, if mine heart have been deceived by a woman, or if I have laid wait at my neighbor's door, then let my wife grind unto another, and let others bow down upon her, for this is a heinous crime. That's the only place in the Bible the word heinous is used. It's not used to describe murder. It's not used even to describe rape, which is awful, too. I mean, that would be another form of fornication or adultery. It's not even describing sodomy. The horrible, the big sins that you can think of, none of them are described as a heinous crime. I just think that's interesting. For this is an heinous crime. Yea, it is an iniquity to be punished by the judges, for it is a fire that consumeth to destruction and would root out all mine increase. And we'll get to that verse 12 again here in this study just in a little while. But he says there, it's an iniquity to be punished by the judges. Now, in the Old Testament, the punishment for adultery was death by stoning. Now, you talk about your years being given to the cruel. You're not going to have any years left once they start to stone you. But that's a cruel punishment. You just imagine laying there and have people pelting you with big rocks in the head. Or I guess in the head would be a mercy, in your body. That would really hurt. You ever been hit with a baseball? Like, you know, playing baseball or something? Imagine being pelted. Yeah, Judy has. That was a pickleball. Imagine what it would have felt like if it would have been a rock. Imagine if it would have been a 6-inch rock smacked you in the face. I mean, that would talk about cruel.
Pastor Regner, yeah. What does grind mean? It says, then let my wife grind. Grind unto another.
That's what, yeah.
Oh.
It's what husbands and wives do. But.
Okay, I'm sorry. I just don't know.
Turn to Deuteronomy 22. Deuteronomy 22:22-24. So here's what happens to the man that gets caught, and the woman for that matter, that gets caught in adultery. It says, if a man be found lying with a woman married to an husband, Then they shall both of them die, both the man that lay with the woman and the woman, so shalt thou put away evil from Israel. If a damsel that is a virgin be betrothed to an husband, and a man find her in the city and lie with her, then ye shall bring them both out unto the gate of the city, and ye shall stone them with stones, that they die, the damsel because she cried not, being in the city, and the man because he hath humbled his neighbor's wife, so thou shalt put away evil from among you. So in both of these cases, where it was a man that committed adultery, both the man and the woman would be stoned, or if it was a virgin that was betrothed to a husband that wasn't basically like engaged, only it was a more formal, serious engagement in those days, they would both be stoned with stones. It was a very dreadful thing. If the law of Moses would have been put into practice as it was supposed to be regularly, there wouldn't have been many adulterers in Israel. You wouldn't have what we have today with people just, you know, doing whatever they feel like, and going out there and shacking up with people and committing adultery and having open relationships or whatever. You wouldn't have anything like that today. And this verse here, just as a side note, verse 22, this explains, I believe, why Jesus did not command the woman in John chapter 8 that was taken in adultery, why he did not command that she should be stoned. Because you remember, they brought this woman to him and they said she was taken in adultery in the very act. Moses' law says she should be stoned. What do you say? And he was writing on the ground with his finger. I think he was probably writing Deuteronomy 22:22. I don't know that for a fact, but I wonder. And he stood up, and said, let him that is without sin cast the first stone. And they all went away from the youngest to the eldest. And then he said, where are those thine accusers? If none accuse thee, neither do I. Go and sin no more. But if Moses' law said that the adulteress should be stoned, why didn't Jesus command that she be stoned? Because Moses' law says that the man and the woman would be stoned. So if she was taken in the very act, where was the guy that was also taken in the very act? He wasn't around. So they weren't keeping Moses' law, and therefore she was not to be stoned because the proper procedure had not been followed. And furthermore, it seems like when he says, let him that is without sin cast the first stone, I'm assuming he's talking about the same type of sin, and they all walk away. Right? So they're all hypocrites.
People wonder if the guy was one of their buddies.
You wonder.
I mean, they should have been able to have the guy.
Yes,
too,
right, exactly.
She was in the act.
Yep. And there was also the same punishment for a woman who fornicated prior to marriage and was found out to have done so after the marriage was already consummated. She was to be stoned likewise. Verse 21, Deuteronomy 22:21 says, then they shall bring out the damsel to the door of her father's house, and the men of her city shall stone her with stones that she die, because she hath wrought folly in Israel to play the whore in her father's house. So shalt thou put evil away from among you. So the background of this is, if a man took a wife, and after the marriage he goes into her, and he finds her not to be a maid, so he doesn't think she's a virgin. So he takes her and says that she's not a virgin, and if her parents can produce the proof that she was a virgin, and here in the verse there it says, and they, verse 17, and they spread the cloth before the elders of the city. So I'm assuming that the custom was that on the wedding night you would clean up with a cloth, and on the, you know, when you break the hymen, you get blood, right? So, you give the cloth to your parents and say, hold on to this just in case we need it. Kind of gross, but I am assuming that's what this is talking about. And if the father can produce it, then this guy gets immersed, not immersed, but immersed, which means to be punished with a fine. He has to pay a fine, 100 shekels of silver, and he has to keep the woman, can't put her away. But if they can't produce the proof, then she gets stoned for working wickedness in Israel. So yeah, the law of Moses was pretty hard on adulterers and fornicators. Now, if two people did, and this is another place in the scripture, but if they did get carried away before they were married and they were found out, then they had to get married. And I think there was some minor punishment. I don't remember exactly what it was, but they weren't stoned. But in this case, if this woman pretended to be a virgin and she wasn't, then she gets stoned. And if it was adultery, of course, it was stoning. So yeah, that would be years given to the cruel, you know, people that are pelting your head with rocks. And then there was a guy, and just as another example, a guy named Shechem, back in Genesis 34. And Shechem found a girl named Dinah, which was Jacob's daughter. He found her out running around when she shouldn't have been. And he liked her and took her for himself and fornicated with her. It wasn't rape, it doesn't sound like, because just from the context here, it sounds like it was consensual. But it still shouldn't have been done. Fornication was not allowed back in those days, just like it has never been allowed. Well, anyway, Shechem defiles Jacob's daughter, and his years were given to the cruel for it. Just let me just read you a couple of verses here. Genesis 34, 1 through 2. And Dinah, the daughter of Leah, which she bare unto Jacob, went out to see the daughters of the land. And when Shechem, the son of Hamor, the Hivite, prince of the country, saw her, he took her and lay with her and defiled her. And his soul clave to Dinah, and he loved her, and he wanted to marry her, as it goes on to say. Well, Jacob's sons, Simeon and Levi, were enraged at what Shechem had done to their sister. They said this ought not to be done. They were really upset about this. And so Shechem wanted to marry her, and so they come up with this idea that they tell the men of Shechem that if you guys become like us, you become Jews, essentially, you get circumcised, then we'll give our daughters unto your sons, and then you give your daughters unto our sons, and you know we'll be all in-laws. Well, they were deceiving as they did that. And so that was in verses 15 and 16 when they said, but in this we will consent unto you, if ye will be as we be, that every male of you be circumcised, then we will give our daughters unto you, and we will take your daughters to us, and we will dwell with you, and we will become one people. But they dissembled. So these men went along with it. They thought, sounds like a pretty good idea, pretty good deal. And on the third day after being circumcised, they were very sore. And then Simeon and Levi go in and kill all of them, the whole family, all the males. And they took all their wealth that it would have taken them years of their lives to acquire. Their years were given to the cruel. Verses 25 through 29. And it came to pass on the third day, when they were sore, that two of the sons of Jacob, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brethren, took each man his sword, and came upon the city boldly, and slew all the males. And they slew Hamor and Shechem, his son, with the edge of the sword, and took Dinah out of Shechem's house, and went out. The sons of Jacob came upon the slain and spoiled the city because they had defiled their sister, and took their sheep and their oxen and their asses and that which was in the city and that which was in the field, and all their wealth and their little ones and their wives took they captive and spoiled even all that was in the house. So basically everything that they had worked all the years of their life to obtain, they ended up losing it. It was given to the cruel. Simeon and Levi were cruel, and I will prove that to you. And they ended up giving their years to them. Look at Genesis 49. Genesis 49, 5 through 7. Jacob was not happy with this whole arrangement. Granted, it was wrong of Shechem to defile Dinah like that, but their reaction was way over the top. You don't murder people for doing something like that. Even under the law of Moses, the punishment for that crime, as I just mentioned, would not have been death. That was totally out of line. Genesis 49:5-7. This is whenever Jacob was giving his blessing, I'll put that in air quotes, his blessing to his sons. Some of them got a blessing, some of them didn't. Reuben didn't for what he did to his father. But Simeon and Levi didn't either. He says, Simeon and Levi are brethren, instruments of cruelty are in their habitations. O my soul, come not thou into their secret, unto their assembly. Mine honor, be not thou united. For in their anger they slew a man, and in their self-will they digged down a wall. Cursed be their anger, for it was fierce, and their wrath, for it was cruel. I will divide them in Jacob and scatter them in Israel. It's interesting because Levi was the father of the Levites and the priests, and yet they were cursed for what they did.
And Shechem was planning on marrying her anyway, right?
Yes. Oh yeah, he was, yeah. Yeah, yeah, that was a cruel, deceitful, underhanded act. So let this be a sobering warning against whoredom and fornication, lest thine honor be given unto others and thy years unto the cruel. Turn to Proverbs 5 and verse 10. Proverbs 5:10 says, lest strangers be filled with thy wealth and thy labors be in the house of a stranger. So this is a continuation from the two reasons that Solomon had given for the commandment that he gave in verse 8. In verse 8, he said, remove thy way far from her, speaking of the strange woman, and come not nigh the door of her house. In verse 9, he gives two reasons, lest thou give thine honor unto others, and thy years unto the cruel. Now in verse 10, he gives another reason, or another two, if you want to split them up separately. So he is, like I said in the previous verse, God's commandment is sufficient for us to obey, but now Solomon is just piling on the reasons why it's so important to obey this particular commandment, because it will totally ruin your life, every aspect of it, if you go into a strange woman. So let's look at the first part of that. Lest strangers be filled with thy wealth. So removing himself from the strange woman and not going near her house will prevent a man from losing his wealth and his livelihood, which is what this verse is teaching us. If you remember the definition of lest, it is used as a negative particle of intention or purpose, introducing a clause expressive of something to be prevented or guarded against. So when he says, lest strangers be filled with thy wealth, he's saying to prevent or guard against strangers being filled with thy wealth, remove thy way far from her, and come not nigh the door of her house. This will prevent strangers being filled with thy wealth. So if a man gets involved with a strange woman, a stranger will end up with his wealth. So just remember that. You get involved with a strange woman, and a strange man is going to end up with all your stuff. A stranger is one who belongs to another country, a foreigner, chiefly, now exclusively, one who resides in or comes to a country to which he is a foreigner, an alien. That's a primary definition. Now, I don't think Solomon's necessarily referring to somebody from another nation necessarily. This definition goes on to say that the first one is somewhat rare, and it recent examples show a mixture of number 2 and 4. And when we look at number 2, a stranger is one who is not a native of, or who has not long resided in a country, town, or place, chiefly a newcomer, one who has not yet become well acquainted with the place, or one who is not yet well known. And this fits very well with what Solomon's talking here about a stranger being filled with thy wealth. Wealth is prosperity, consisting in abundance of possessions, worldly goods, valuable possessions, especially in great abundance, riches, or affluence. So in other words, the man who commits adultery with a strange woman will lose his possessions and riches to a man whom he doesn't even know yet. Some stranger that comes in and just picks up where he left off. He's going to lose it all to him. And this is part of the judgment of God for whoredom. We're told in Proverbs 13 and verse 22, just in general, this could apply to the whoremonger, or it could apply to any number of sinners. But in general, we're told Proverbs 13, 22, a good man leaveth an inheritance to his children's children, and the wealth of the sinner is laid up for the just. So yes, if you sin and you work hard and acquire a lot of wealth, God says, okay, now I'm going to take that from you and I'm going to give it to somebody else. That's how it works. And this is one of God's punishments for sin in general. Let's look at a couple of verses here. First of all, Job 27, 16 through 17. Because of the shame and losing the honor and all those things, that's bad enough. But then losing everything, or at least half of everything you've worked for your whole life, that's really a kick in the pants. Job 27, 16 through 17. It says, though he heap up silver as the dust, and prepare raiment as the clay, he may prepare it, but the just shall put it on, and the innocent shall divide the silver. And Job was right on there. You can heap it up. You can get all kinds of possessions and clothes and nice things and prepare it. But guess what? Somebody else is going to end up enjoying it if you're a sinner. Let's look at Ecclesiastes 2:26. Ecclesiastes 2:26. It says, for God giveth to a man that is good in his sight wisdom and knowledge and joy. But to the sinner he giveth travail to gather and to heap up, that he may give to him that is good before God. This also is vanity and vexation of spirit. I'll give you a couple of examples, or at least, yeah, I'll give you two. I'll give you two examples of this very thing here in just a moment. So yeah, he heaps it up, and God gives it to somebody else that's good before him. And this is how God punishes greedy people. Proverbs 28 and verse 8. It says, he that by usury, which is charging interest, he that by usury and unjust gain increaseth his substance, he shall gather it for him that will pity the poor. Yeah, you may gain a lot by ripping people off and charging them way too much interest whenever they're poor and they're in desperate straits. Yeah, you'll heap it up, and then God will give it to somebody else. That's how it works. Be not deceived, God is not mocked, for whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he reap also. And I'll give you a couple of examples of this. The example of Haman. You remember that wicked man back in the book of Esther? Esther 8, 1 through 2. Haman tried to kill the Jew named Mordecai because Mordecai would not bow down to him. And you remember the story, and through an interesting chain of events, Haman ends up being hanged on the gallows that he made for Mordecai, and then all of Haman's stuff ends up being given to Mordecai. The wealth of the sinners laid up for the just. Esther 8, verses 1 through 2. It says, on that day did the king Ahasuerus give the house of Haman, the Jew's enemy, unto Esther the queen, and Mordecai came before the king, for Esther had told what he was unto her. And the king took off his ring, which he had taken from Haman, and gave it unto Mordecai, and Esther set Mordecai over the house of Haman. So everything that Haman had, Mordecai came into possession of. It just shows you that it always pays to do the right thing. Mordecai could have just bowed down like all the rest of those guys, but he wouldn't. He just wouldn't do it. He was going to do the right thing, just like the early Christians in Rome. If they'd have just bowed down to Zeus, burn some incense to Jupiter, they'd have been fine. The Romans didn't even care. You go ahead and worship Jesus. Just bow down to Zeus and Jupiter and the other gods and bow down to Caesar and you'd be fine. And they said, nope. And they died and they burned at the stake. But guess what? Their reward is in heaven. And their reward will come in the new earth. They'll be blessed for it. And then you remember back in Exodus, whenever the Lord delivered the Israelites from Egypt, Egypt was a wealthy place, and the Lord took their wealth and gave it to the Jews as he took them out of the land. He says there in Exodus 3, 21 through 22, It says, and I will give this people favor in the sight of the Egyptians, and it shall come to pass that when ye go, ye shall not go empty. They were slaves. I mean, slaves don't own much of anything. You know, maybe the clothes on your back if you're lucky. But every woman shall borrow. I think you should put borrow there in quotes. But every woman shall borrow of her neighbor and of her that sojourneth in her house jewels of silver and jewels of gold and raiment. And ye shall put them upon your sons and upon your daughters, and ye shall spoil the Egyptians. That might seem a little bit unethical, but you know what? If God tells you to do it, do it. The wealth of the sinner is laid up for the just. The earth is the Lord's and the fullness thereof. God owned all those jewels, and if he wants to take them from some sinner and give it to some just person, then he can do that. Now, I don't want to see any of you walking around with some nice jewels saying, well, I borrowed them from my neighbor, because, you know, biblical precedent, after all, the things that are written aforetime are written for my learning. You know, so that's a little different. You got to get a direct commandment from the Lord to do something like that. But so how will strangers be filled with thy wealth? Well, the whoremonger will be taken to divorce court and sued for half of his wealth. That's how it happens today, anyway. I don't know how it happened back then. He was probably killed if somebody got all of his stuff, right? He'd be stoned. Today, it still holds true. Strangers will be filled with thy wealth, at least half of it. You know, well, Jeff Bezos didn't commit adultery, but, you know, the owner of Amazon, he got a divorce here a few years ago, and his wife got like $50 billion. And now he's worth $200. I mean, he made that up and then some. But yeah, $50 billion he lost in that case. But if you got $50 billion, you got $100 billion, who cares? I mean, not like you'd miss 50 anyway. But for the average Joe, you know, when you don't have an extra 50 laying around, you're going to be in big trouble if you get half of everything you have taken from you. His wealth will then end up being the property of his ex-wife's new husband, right? Because he pays her out, and then some other guy comes in and marries her, and the wealth of the sinner is laid up for the just. That guy gets to just walk right into all her former husband's wealth. And this is why it says there in Job 31 and verse 12 that adultery will root out all a man's increase. Job 31, verse 12. We just read this a minute ago, but I'll read just this one verse to you again. He's speaking of adultery that he was talking about there earlier. And he says, for it is a fire that consumeth to destruction and would root out all mine increase, lest strangers be filled with thy wealth. And then the second half of the verse, and thy labors be in the house of a stranger. Now, labor is exertion of the faculties of the body or mind, especially when painful or compulsory, bodily or mental toil. So it's work that you do with your head or with your hands, as we know. And the result of labor is money, which is used to purchase goods. So ultimately, your labor ends up in goods or services that you can enjoy. And the goods that were acquired by the labor of the adulterer will end up in the house of the man whom his ex-wife marries. His labor will be in the house of a stranger. Let me just give you an example of this. You remember the Canaanites. The Lord took Israel out of Egypt, and he was going to give them the land of Canaan. And the Canaanites were losing their land for, among other things, sexual sin. And this resulted in their labor being inherited by the Israelites, who were strangers in their land. Lest thy labor be in the house of a stranger. Let me just show you that sexual sins like adultery were reasons why these heathen were being cast out of the land. Leviticus 20 and verse 23. So in verse 23 he tells us that they're being cast out for these abominations. He says, and ye shall not walk in the manners of the nation, which I cast out before you, for they committed all these things, and therefore I abhorred them. And all these things are listed in verses 10 through 21. I'm not going to read those, but they include verse 10, adultery, verse 11, lying with your father's wife, verse 12, lying with a daughter-in-law, verse 13, sodomy, verse 14, lying with a mother-in-law, verse 15, bestiality, verse 17, incest. And, you know, all kinds of nasty, incestuous, adultery-type sins. And it was for that reason that they were cast out of the land. The Israelites inherited their land and their labor. It says specifically their labor in Psalm 105 and verse 44. The labor of the Canaanites ended up being in the house of the Israelites. Psalm 105, 44. It says, and gave them the lands of the heathen, and they inherited the labor of the people. That was the Jews, the Canaanites, land and labor. Now, not only will the fruits of past labor be in the house of a stranger, but the fruits of present and future labor can as well. And this happens by a thing called alimony, when the judge orders alimony payments to be made by the adulterer to his wife for a period of time after their divorce. And I don't know how all this works technically. I don't know if you can be paying alimony after your ex-wife remarries or not. But if that's the case, and maybe it is, I don't know, it doesn't work that way. Okay. Well, nevertheless, your future labor, until your wife remarries, gets paid out into alimony payments to her, which ends up in the house of the stranger that she marries later on. So your labor does eventually end up in the house of a stranger. This can also happen if the fornicator impregnates the strange woman and has to pay child support for the next 18 years, which could end up in the house of her new husband or boyfriend, even. His labor will be in the house of a stranger for the next 18 years because of his foolishness. So the strange woman, as it says in Proverbs 6 and verse 26, can bring a man to poverty. Proverbs 6:26. It says, for by means of a whorish woman, a man is brought to a piece of bread, and the adulteress will hunt for the precious life. I remember my friends in Cincinnati, whenever they were teaching their kids, they were reading them the Proverbs when they were wee little and teaching them those, and Noah thought it said, by means of a whorish woman. Like she had a really long face or something, you know. But by means of a whorish woman, a man is brought to a piece of bread, which if you're brought to a piece of bread, it pretty much means you don't have much left, right? Your labor is now in the house of a stranger. So men, beware. If you go into the strange woman, you will end up giving your honor unto others, your years to the cruel, your wealth will be in a stranger's house, and so will your labor. It's a dreadful thing, so we all want to be very careful and guard our hearts.